Welcome back into your latest episode of Locked On Suns, part of your Locked On Podcast Network. Today's guest, your host, Evan Sider, and joined by a very special guest today's show, talking through the Suns versus Celtics scrimmage that happened yesterday on Sunday afternoon. Brandon, as you guys know, I'm on Twitter at AZ Sports Zone. Brandon, how are you doing today?
Doing great. Looking forward to talking about some real basketball for once.
Oh, I know. It's been a while, and luckily the Suns are now through two of their three scrimmage games, and the real action starts for the Suns here at the end of this week on Friday as they play the Washington Wizards in their first of eight regular season bubble games, see if they can try to pull off a miracle here and go 8-0 to somehow reach in this play-in tournament. But today we're going to talk about this scrimmage, 117-103, the final score of the Boston Celtics beat the Phoenix Suns. But really, Brandon, the Suns only played their stars about 2.5 quarters in this one, really more about the bench squad here. But let's start off with the big story here. I think the biggest story, obviously, in the first two games is Mikal Bridges here, because another solid game for Mikal, very much looking like he's gained a lot more confidence on that end. What's been your impression of Mikal Bridges so far? Because he had 16 points yesterday. He had 14 points in the first scrimmage game. A very aggressive Mikal is good for everyone else around him.
Yeah, absolutely. I just love how aggressive he's playing. Like, even if he's not as efficient as you'd like, just seeing him attempt 13 shots and get to the line a few times, just really positive sign, because, you know, even if he's not going to be a knockdown shooter, if he could just attack off the dribble with confidence, it just really adds another dynamic to this team.
Yeah, Mikal was, like I mentioned, 16 points, 5 rebounds. He also has 3 blocks in 28 minutes. Very good defense of Jason Tatum here. And Brandon, I know David Nash pointed out a couple days ago at the 4-point play on Twitter, but I think this is kind of a chance for Mikal to kind of break out on the national scene, because Suns fans have known for the last really 2 years since he stepped in day one as a legit wing defender, very versatile defender. But locking down Jason Tatum on the national scene, I know it's only a scrimmage, but he was 3 of 13. Tatum was against Bridges. This feels like a really good chance for Mikal, if he does continue to be aggressive on offense, to really kind of take the next step in his development, kind of be more of a player in 2020, 2021, who could be like, okay, Mikal Bridges is really good on defense, and he could be a player that could be on the All-NBA defense team here very, very soon.
Yeah, absolutely. And shout out to David Nash. You know, made a good point about some of the wings he's going to have to guard in the stretch. And, you know, if he continues to play the defense we know he can, then, you know, the national attention is going to come. It already started, but, you know, it's only going to, you know, grow as he continues to shut down some of the top wings in the league. And I don't know if you saw this, but Zach Milliner actually posted he clipped all the defensive highlights of Mikal on Tatum, and just even the shots Tatum was making, like, Bridges just played amazing defense. So, I mean, just great defense, better offense, and he really just controlled that entire matchup from start to finish.
Yeah, I had a chance to talk about Mikal with Devin Booker after that game, the first scrimmage game, and also Ricky Rubio today on Zoom call. And both of them were really mentioning the same thing as far as when Mikal's aggressive, it's good for everyone else around him. They have very high expectations for him in the offensive end. If this is a preview of things to come, Brandon, what's the ceiling for Mikal in year three? Because this could really be the first of a sneak peek of a full-fledged breakout here for Mikal.
Yeah, like we kind of talked about in the last time I was on, when we were just mentioning, you know, the Oladipo rumor with Bridges involved, like, neither of us wanted to include him. And yeah, granted, it's just two scrimmage games, but so far he's kind of, you know, proven our point. I think his upside is just as a two-way player is just immense. And I think he can, you know, just completely change the dynamic of this team if he can step up as a reliable third option.
Yeah, he really has shown to be a reliable third option for the Suns, at least in these two scrimmage games. He really did show in late February, early March, when Kelly Oubre went out there. The Suns are actually 5-2 this season when Mikal is aggressive, taking 10 more shots in a game, including wins against the Boston Celtics and the Milwaukee Bucks, arguably their two best wins of the season so far. It wasn't when Mikal was aggressive, but I pulled some really interesting stats for Mikal. I know this is maybe a small sample size, something we'll have to look forward to later in the offseason, Brandon, but when Mikal plays with Kelly Oubre, he only averages 7.8 points per game, only 6 field goal attempts per game. When Kelly Oubre does not play, not including the scrimmage games in the last two, but over the last 9 regular season games, 14.4 points, 3 assists, almost 49% from 3, and a doubling of shot attempts, almost 10 per game. What do you think this means? Maybe it's just like a random correlation here with Kelly being out, it takes more of a role, but does that kind of show you that maybe Mikal should be given more of a usage percentage in next season? Because I know Kelly's a player who needs the ball in his hands a lot, but Mikhail's proven that maybe he needs the ball more in his hands too.
Yeah, I think it's kind of a combination of both those things. Like, I think his confidence has grown, and he, like, finished the season strong, as you mentioned. So it's just kind of translated into these scrimmages, like, right away. And obviously with no Oubre, he knows he's going to have to step up offensively. But, yeah, I'm going to be very interested to see how aggressive he remains once Oubre returns, if he returns in Orlando, if not next season, assuming they're both still on the roster. But yeah, I think, you know, it's definitely encouraging to see that he can get it done without Oubre. And, you know, it's definitely something to monitor when he gets back.
Another player we should hit on too, talking very positive this game. There's some negatives, and we're going to hit on later in the show, especially with this bench unit the Suns have. It's been a problem all throughout the year. But Devin Booker had a very good game. I know inefficiency-wise, it might not be the best. He had took a lot of shots. He only finished around the same points as Mikal did. But 9 assists in 24 minutes for Booker in this one, even Ricky Rubio playing. It feels like Booker's playmaking, especially in these situations, keeps improving every time we see him. I know this is a long break for him, 4.5 months without basketball, but he knows where to find the right spots. It seems like he's very comfortable now in this primary initiator role when Rubio is either playing off ball or when Rubio is sitting.
Yeah, I think part of it's just, you know, obviously the playmaking's improved gradually over the last few years, but just trusting his teammates more too. Like he, I think that gives him more confidence to pass, knowing, you know, he's going to get an assist out of it. And he has, you know, Dario, who we haven't talked about yet, you know, was playing really well, and they kind of had just good all-around ball movement yesterday. Even though it was like sort of sloppy to start, like you mentioned, and he was kind of jacking up a lot of shots early, that's, I actually like to see that, because I'd rather him just shoot out of it than just elect not to shoot at all.
Yeah, definitely agree with you there. Booker, obviously, high usage player, needs to get his shots up. And when he gets going, Brandon, it's very hard to stop. We saw, I think he made a pull-up three in transition there. I think he made the next three or four of his shots. And that just goes to show the evolution of Booker as far as when he gets going, he really is almost impossible to guard. But this is something I brought up to you during the game on my Twitter account, that it feels like the next step in Booker's evolution is that pull-up three, Brandon, because he only shot 34% from the pull-up threes this year. He's very much throughout his career been a below-average pull-up three-point shooter. But do you think the next step in his evolution here is becoming more like a Damian Lillard, Trae Young type, where he can just dribble down the court after he gets the ball off the inbounds and just pulls up from like 30 feet and be a more consistent threat from there? Because I think that opens up not only more for himself, but also the rest of his teammates, because I think if Booker adds that to his arsenal more consistent level, he's going to be really impossible to guard.
Yeah, no, that's definitely the next step in his game. We know he's capable of doing it. It's just some of the degree of difficulty on those shots, or obviously when he's pulling up from that deep, it's going to be tough. But I think just with improved floor spacing, just with the roster improving with him as well, I think it's something that's just going to come over time. You know, I think playing off the ball has definitely helped with his efficiency, with Rubio taking some of that burden off him and just not being taxed to do everything on offense. So I definitely think, you know, it'll be a gradual improvement. I'm not sure if it's going to be one of those things where he jumps up to like the 40% mark on threes, just because how high like the degree of difficulty is on some of the shots he takes. But I definitely think there's room for him to grow in that area.
Moving on now to our next positive of this game, Brandon, was Dario Saric, who unfortunately went out late in the first half, or maybe it was early in the third quarter there, with tweaking his ankle. It was the end of the second quarter, where he tweaked his ankle stepping on Frank Kaminsky's foot while going for a rebound. At that point, he had 12 points, 8 rebounds, 2 assists on 5 of 8 shooting in only around 15 minutes. An aggressive Dario maintained through game one into game two, and it seemed like he was well on his way to another great game. What's been your impression of Dario so far in the bubble?
He's been awesome. You know, you saw just in the team photos, like getting off the plane, social media, he looked cut, looked like he was ready to work. And obviously he knows this is an opportunity for him to, you know, kind of showcase his skills before he hits the open market. So, you know, he obviously has something to play for, and it's good to see him kind of bonding, like, you know, with the younger guys as well, like little rivalry he has with Cam Johnson is pretty funny. His all around play has just been, it's looked like the Dario that we expected to get, I feel like, at the beginning of the year, which, you know, he had his ups and downs this year, but it's very encouraging to see him play this effectively offensively.
Now, what if Dario maintains, of course, we'll have to see with his ankle injury, if he does end up playing in their regular season opener on Friday. It's still up in the air, of course, after it looked like a pretty nasty ankle injury for Dario, but hopefully it's not nothing too bad, just a little tweak there. Do you think if Dario continues to prove himself in this bubble environment, Brandon, that only a $5.1 million restricted tag for Dario next year, even if he doesn't start next year, like being a legit 6th, 7th man off the bench for this team in a 4-5 role, I feel like it makes so much sense to bring him back. He's only still only 24 years old.
Yeah, it could be like a nice cheap option. I think the thing with him though, like right now he's starting. So is he going to play with this level of enthusiasm and like buy into, you know, a bench role? If he does, then I'd be all for it. If not, then I'm not sure it's the best fit, obviously, because I think their best starting lineup is with the versatile wings next to Ayton. So it all depends on how open he is to coming off the bench, essentially.
Yeah, I agree with you on that sense. I think with Dario, it's going to be a lot about what he wants as far as his next year goes. If he wants to be a starter, it's probably not going to be in Phoenix, so he'll probably go with the greener pastures there. But only for $5 million, I think it can make a lot of sense if he is open to it to bring him back on that type of deal for 1 year and see what happens there. But another point I wanted to hit on with you from a positive standpoint, DeAndre Ayton didn't really do much in the box score on this one, but we might have to hit on his threes here, Brandon, because it's now the second game in a row he's made a three, this one off pick and roll with Ricky Rubio. Do you think this is a legit thing now where it seems like DeAndre mentioned this post-game too after the Utah game, and also Monty mentioned it, that almost like Joel Embiid, if they're sagging off you on the three-point line, shoot it. And Ayton's shot looks a lot better. The arc on his shot looks a lot more smoother and a lot more not less flat, so to say, which it was throughout the first 2 years of his career. This could change everything for the Suns' offense, Brandon, if he can start spreading the floor consistently.
Oh, yeah. I've been preaching this for a while now. I think he's got to eventually become a threat from out there. Don't want him to chuck up a bunch of threes, but you know, if they're giving him the shot, he has to be able to knock it down just from a spacing perspective. So, you know, we talked about this last time I was on the pod with you, just, you know, if he doesn't take a three in Orlando, I was like, I'm going to be mad. So I'm very happy with what I've seen so far. Just even though it's only two attempts, I'm just glad he's using this platform to practice something that's going to be huge in his development. And, you know, his ceiling rises exponentially if he's, you know, even just a league average shooter from distance and can make the defense respect him out there. It just really adds another element to his game with his interior threat and just gravity and his passing ability as well. So if he's consistently shooting threes, and you know, it's the ceiling for the offense just rises dramatically.
Yeah, and it's only been about 50 minutes he's played so far in Orlando in these two scrimmage games, not actual regular season games. I don't want to take too much of this to legitimacy, but I just want to hit on just your overall impressions of Ayton so far. It looks like his defense is maintained from what we saw throughout the regular season. He even looks better in that sense, being more versatile, being able to switch more. Looks even more quicker laterally than I remember from him in late March and February. What is your overall impressions of Ayton so far? He's moving the ball more too. He's becoming more of a player. He's not just setting screens and just staying put. He's more moving around off ball too. It seems like Ayton's development is really taking on a fun curve here.
Yeah, I've liked what I've seen so far. He did get into a little bit of foul trouble early yesterday and only played, I think, like 5 or 6 minutes in the second half. So, you know, obviously the numbers weren't like popping out of the stat sheet, but the defense looks like it's been sustained, and he looks a little bit quicker laterally, as you mentioned. So I think if he continues to just improve defensively and adds these new wrinkles to his game, then, you know, it's going to be a lot of fun to watch him develop. And I think the next step for him is just attacking off the dribble and just using his body to, you know, create contact and draw more fouls. Because he hasn't attempted a free throw yet. So I think that's pretty much the last thing I'm really focusing on right now. Just, you know, like making those 1-2 dribble moves to, you know, with a purpose to get in the lane and just seek out the contact.
Yeah, that really is the next step for Ayton there. If he's expanding his range now, we have to see more of him being aggressive, taking those moves to the basket, getting to the free throw line, because Ayton's a very good shooter from the free throw line, around 75-80% throughout his career there. So that's guaranteed points on pretty much every time he gets to the line there. So hopefully Ayton does add that to his bag here soon. And I think year three could be a lot of fun if we see the Mikhail leap and the Ayton leap simultaneously. I think his team is going to be a lot better than they were this year. But one more positive one with you as far as the Suns go, before we dive into some negatives on this bench unit, you know, for a second, is Ricky Rubio. He's finally back, played 19 minutes yesterday, moved the ball around a lot. I think he had 4 assists, but I counted 3 more that were secondary assists. So very much moving the ball around in a very short amount of time. The Suns offense too, Brandon, just moves so much better when Rubio's out there as far as ball movement goes. I think he's just a really underrated pivotal piece to this offense and defense for the Suns roster. What was your impression seeing Rubio finally playing? I know it was after post-COVID-19. He was diagnosed with COVID-19, finally came back to the bubble last week and played in the first scrimmage game for them against the Celtics. What was your impression of seeing Rubio out there on the court?
I thought he looked pretty good given the circumstances. You know, it's obviously there's going to be some rust when you're coming back from that long of a gap of not playing. But, you know, like you mentioned, the ball movement was pretty crisp when he was out there. And don't know if you, I mean, I think you clipped the pass or like the around the back pass. Yeah. Crazy ball movement. Yeah. That was just, that was insane. I don't know how he made that look so easy. It was, but yeah, just the team's just better when he's on the court. It's, and the numbers back that up. And, you know, obviously he has his faults and, you know, the shooting is a little bit iffy and all that. But, you know, I think it's vital that he's here in Orlando to help guys like Ayton and Bridges kind of take the next step in their improving their game. So it's good to see him back. I thought he looked overall pretty decent given, you know, it's his first game back.
Suns fans, you know the drill by now. RockAuto.com will save you so much more money compared to the other stores around there. Whether it's a fuel pump assembly saving over $175 or if it's a tail lamp, new carpet, or motor oil, RockAuto.com is everything you need and more, all in the cheap way at RockAuto on their website, which makes it so much more convenient instead of go in the store. It's ordered off their website and it goes right to your door. RockAuto.com is a family business serving auto part customers online for 20 plus years. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to motor oil and new carpet. Whether it's your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. And the RockAuto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available to your vehicle and choose the brand, specifications, and price you prefer. And best of all, prices at RockAuto.com are always reliably low and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. So why spend the twice as much for the same parts when you can get even cheaper at RockAuto? Go to RockAuto.com right now and see the parts available for your car or truck, write Locked On in your How'd You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. Again, that's Locked On, LOCKEDON, and their How'd You Hear About Us box so they know Locked On Sun sent you.
Yeah, definitely agree with you there. Like Ruby mentioned today on the Zoom call with us, he's still knocking some rust off, hopes to be back to a lot better strength by Friday when the Suns open their regular season bubble against the Washington Wizards. But I wanted to hit on for a second on this bench unit, and the first one I wanted to hit on this player was Ty Jerome, because I tweeted out during the game, rough minutes from Ty Jerome right now. All the replies I got in there were all season with the first game. They're all rough minutes, literally every time he's in the court. It seems like there's good flashes with Jerome in the first game against Utah. He had a few good sequences against Joe Ingles. He had a few good sequences getting the floater off against Rudy Gobert. But I don't know what happened with Ty in this game, but he went back into his shell, so to say, not hitting open shots, very timid on the court again. What is it with Ty Jerome so far, Brand? Because I'm starting to get a little concerned myself here as far as if Ty Jerome is going to be able to fully function in the role that the Suns want him to.
Yeah, so I think with him, it's just a confidence thing, which, you know, it's typical for rookies, especially, you know, he's coming off that severe ankle injury. So he's had to kind of rework mentally from all that. And just been kind of a crazy season for him all around. So, you know, if he's not making threes, and that's his go-to, his bread and butter is his shot, then it kind of deflates the confidence in the other areas of his game, I feel like. So with him, like, he's a much better shooter than he's shown us. I think that's going to come, like, that's going to, the numbers are going to flatten out over the course of his career, and he'll get closer to what he was in Virginia. But with that, you know, the improved shooting, I think, will help him be more confident to make some moves that he's not doing right now. And you know, he just seems like he's just kind of unsure of himself. And but whenever he's not thinking, you know, like, he's hit a couple buzzer beaters where, you know, he knows he has to shoot and he's just shooting with confidence, and, you know, they've gone in. So I think just him playing with more confidence is going to do wonders for him. And he just needs to find a way to get it in the first place, which, you know, who knows when that'll happen.
How intrigued are you to see Ty Jerome in 2020-2021, Brandon? Because this seems like a big year upcoming for Ty. I imagine the Suns will accept his third-year team option. It's only $2.3 million, just $100,000 more than he's making already in his rookie year. But next year will be the pivotal year as far as if they need to see if they'll pick up his fourth-year option, which Dragan Bender, that did not happen there. I think it's a big year upcoming for Ty Jerome, where he's going to have to show in the offseason here that he can be the legitimate backup point guard of this team. Because if he doesn't blossom into that role, Brandon, I just don't see where he'd be. Because right now, just based off Orlando minutes and just seeing how confident Monty Williams is, I think campaign's kind of pulling away here in this backup point guard spot.
Yeah, and it's crucial for him to use this opportunity to kind of develop into, you know, a rotational player, because I'm not sure he's going to have the same opportunity next year, just because, you know, it's pretty obvious they need some help in the bench. And you know, the writing's on the wall. They're probably going to go after at least one or two guards to help stabilize their bench. And, you know, if that's the case, then there's, like, not going to be much of a role for Jerome. So, you know, this, he's going to have to find a way to prove himself and get himself back in the rotation over campaign once they have everyone back. And, you know, Kobo's status is in question. I know he did practice today for the first time, I believe. So He's going to have to pick it up, and he's not going to get an opportunity like this again. So it's important that he takes advantage of it.
Another negative so far on the bench, at least from a scrimmage game. I don't want to dive too deep into it because, of course, it's just a scrimmage. But Frank Kaminsky was the team worst in plus-minus. Looked like sort of the Kaminsky we saw throughout the year outside the first month or so where he was very hot from three and really cooled off significantly from there. What was your impression of Kaminsky? Because I feel like Dario, unlike Dario, Kaminsky really doesn't have the game, like, aggressiveness that Dario does going to the rim. He can draw contact. Frank isn't like that. He's more very relied on his jump shot there. So when the shots aren't falling, almost like Ty Jerome here, Brandon, where if Kaminsky's shots aren't falling, he's almost a net negative out there.
Yeah, he's got to shoot. That's just the bottom line with him. He's not good enough scorer defensively to, like, offset, for his lack of shooting when he's not hitting them. So with him, it's just, he's been a streaky player his whole career. So hopefully like a flick will switch and, he'll find that, that 3-point shot and he can get hot in Orlando. And because right now their bench really needs someone to step up, especially if Kelly doesn't play. They're going to need a spark. So he's going to have, all the opportunity in the world, especially like for however long Baines is out. So, they're going to need him to become that beginning of the season shooter that he was.
Yeah, when Dario went out with his ankle injury yesterday, the Suns actually started the second half with Cam Johnson at power forward there alongside Mikal Bridges and DeAndre. And so Frank is still in his bench role there, probably going to be a heavy minutes player off the bench if Baines doesn't play and Dario doesn't play in these first few bubble openers if Dario doesn't heal quickly from his ankle injury. Mm-hmm. What were your impressions of Cam Johnson, though, in yesterday's game? I know in the first game he was very anxious. He was really almost airballed a shy hit, went off the backboard too. But after that, he kind of cooled down. Saw a good few sequences from Cam yesterday too. If Dario doesn't play, Brandon, I feel like there's a chance that we might see Cam Johnson starting on Friday. So what's been your impression of Cam Johnson so far?
I like the changes he's made to his body. It looks like he's really put on some muscle and just not like there's two different types of like putting on weight. And there's like the bad weight where it's just going to kind of slow you down. But for him, it was like core strength and stuff like that he needed to add. And I just think just if he can play some stretch 4 minutes and, he could really help space the floor and just, attacking off the dribble. There was a move he had yesterday where he just kind of blew right by the defense and just threw it down and everyone just kind of caught off guard, just kind of like that dunk he had against the Lakers earlier this year. And, if he could add some more flashes of that, then, I think all of a sudden you're looking at, a lot of people were calling him a reach, myself included, on draft night. But if he's adding these different elements to his game, he has a chance to be a really good player.
Yeah, I was right there with you on draft night. I remember in the media room that night, recording the podcast live, I was still befuddled about the moves that the Suns made. But it looks like it's paying off here as far as Cam Johnson's development. Dario's looking pretty good. So if this continues, I think the Suns are looking in pretty good shape as far as Cam Johnson goes. And maybe if Dario comes back, very deep a sort of front court there for the Suns outside of Aaron Baines, DeAndre, Mikal Bridges, Kelly Oubre. But I wanted to hit on as well just one more point. Your impression of this backup point guard spot competition that Monty's mentioned it multiple times to us to resume that he wants to make it a tough decision. He wants to see these players like Ty Jerome, Javon Carter, campaign kind of show themselves to Monty, and he's going to pick someone to kind of be that guy when Ricky Rubio sits out whenever he's off the floor. Who are you leaning right now between those three guys right now to take over that backup point guard spot when the first game starts on Friday?
So I think all signs kind of point towards Payne and Carter as like the two main guards off the bench. I think Carter's going to play a lot off ball. Just, his like hustle and energy is something that they're always going to have like a use for. But right now I'd say, even though Payne wasn't like that great yesterday, I just think he's looked better and like the offense has looked better than when Jerome's been on the court. So if I had to pick right now, I'd say Payne has a little bit of an edge, but I mean, obviously, Jerome has a good third scrimmage and Payne struggles and a good flip just like that. So it's still kind of up in the air, but I think right now Javon Carter is kind of has the clearest path towards minutes of the three.
Yeah. Ricky Rubio actually said to us today on Zoom that he's seen campaign has a good feel already of running the offense. Knows that says teammates up well. And he looks a lot better playmaking wise than what I remember from OKC. He was more just like a ball hawk sort of say in those situations, but he really, I think he's learned and matured over the way that he has to spread the ball around. And he's shown that. What's been your impression of campaign so far? Because honestly, for a guy that's only been around a couple of weeks, looks actually really impressive.
Yeah. He's looked a lot better than I expected. That's for sure. Especially in the first game, just some of the shots he's making and just the way the ball moved when he's on the court, you could just tell there wasn't really a like how we've seen in the past with the bench, it's just, you know, it can get bad at times. Like, it's just the ball's not moving. People are just taking bad shots. And he just kind of kept everyone in sync. And it seemed like he'd been there for a long time, even though he's like brand new to the system. So overall, I've been impressed. I'm still not sold that he's going to be like a long-term piece, but I'd be happy to be proven wrong.
Last few questions I had for you, Brandon. Appreciate the time as always, man. I wanted to head on the bench just for a second and looking ahead to next season, because I had a listener ask me this over Twitter, and I was thinking about really who the bench pieces could be for the Suns team next year. Outside of Cam Johnson, there really is no one I can really trust right now, unless they do re-sign Aaron Baines to a one-year deal. If Dario comes back on his restricted tag, and that brings you to three there, but you still need at least one or two more pieces there to play around 15 to 25 minutes per game off this bench. Mm-hmm. What do you think is going to happen with the Suns team this offseason? Because it keeps coming back, rearing its ugly head, so to say, Brandon, that this team really doesn't need to add much just on the margins there as far as if they can improve this bench, they're going to be a lot better team.
Yeah, I think point guards probably – they need someone that can come in and just, you know, keep the offense running, like create their own shot. So I think – whether it's through the draft or free agency, signing like a veteran that can just come in and help for like on a one-year deal, I think that's one area they're going to need to solidify for sure. And the other spot obviously would be the forward position. I think obviously backup center is important and Baines could be the guy, but if he's not, there's always going to be, you know, some cheap, like mid-level guy you could sign that, you know, doesn't kill you on that end. So I think just finding another forward that's like a change of pace type of four next to, like, you know, Kelly and Mikal would definitely help. So obviously draft day is kind of really going to – it all hinges on that, like what they do with their pick, whether they keep it, trade down. So there's so many different directions they can go, but it's going to start there.
What do you think about Luke Kennard, Brandon? Because this is something that I've been bringing up and I've been warming up to, and honestly, after February and the first reports, I was kind of taken aback by it because I didn't think Kennard fit well. But when you dive in and watch more of Kennard's tape, he's a great shooter, great facilitator. Would you give, let's say, the 10th or 11th pick in the draft for a guy like Luke Kennard?
So the first thing I'll say is he's really good. Like, I think a lot of Suns fans don't, like, realize how, especially since he's playing in Detroit, you know, obviously there's not a lot of people paying attention to them. But he's like, proven that he can score in bunches, and he'd help a lot off the bench and give them kind of that punch they need. But I would say it really just depends on who's available when they're picking, which is kind of a cop-out answer. If the board shakes out in like an unfavorable way, then I would probably strongly consider that. But if there's, you know, one of their top targets is available, then I'd probably elect to just keep the pick just because, you know, it's a cheap contract and cheaper than Kennard at this point. And you know, you can find someone that's going to fill a role right away. And you have all these extensions coming up with Booker and Ayton and Mikal. So you also have to keep that in the back of your mind if you trade for someone like Kennard. But, you know, I think he'd actually really be like a much needed offensive boost. If they can't trade for him, you know, adding someone similar to his archetype would be ideal.
Yeah, Kennard definitely would fit the puzzle piece pretty well here for the Suns off their bench, being sort of the pseudo six man. But like you mentioned there, if the board breaks, well, I know we had a lottery mock draft a couple weeks ago on the show, and we had Jax Frank and Ben Pfeiffer on, and the Suns actually had on the board there at number 10, Tyrese Haliburton, Devin Vassell, Kyra Lewis. So if it breaks that way, I would definitely be in favor of keeping that pick and picking one of those three guys there. But last one I have for you, Brandon, what is your overall thoughts of this team through two scrimmage games heading into this bubble here on Friday? Because we're getting closer and closer and closer to the seeing Suns basketball actually in real action where the records actually count.
So far, you know, especially just they're looking at their starters mainly, I've been pretty impressed. Like they've looked locked in and focused. You know, everyone in their starting lineup was, you know, a positive plus minus yesterday as well. So it's just kind of the same, you know, the bench obviously looked like great versus Utah, but, you know, they kind of regressed to their old self yesterday. So I think just finding that answer off the second unit will be key if they really want to, you know, scrape out as many wins as possible. But just from like a developmental perspective, I've been very encouraged, and I don't think you could really ask for much more than what we've seen. It's just about how it all comes together, because it's just such a weird situation with, you know, some of the team being there, some of them not, you know, slowly transitioning from like getting into the bubble and all that. So hopefully everyone just stays healthy and they can find a way to gel.
Really appreciate the time, Brandon. You guys can go follow him on Twitter if you're not already, at AZ Sports Zone. Brandon, appreciate the time.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man.